here.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice and ready. All you had to do was walk to the memorial here.
No, left to right was very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but asking someone where it was would be helpful. Okay, welcome to World Review Commentary. This is your host, George Butler. We're set up in Washington, D.C. today under a bright, sunshiny skies, and we're right now we're viewing directly the Vietnam War Memorial, and there are all kinds of veterans surrounding us. There have been two or three color guards that have come by. We are truly in awe of what has been going on here, and we are really wanting to be a part of this reverence for our fallen military. We're set up here today. We were in Philadelphia yesterday, and I want to welcome my guest co-host Charlotte Littlefield with me.
Hello, George.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Good. It's beautiful weather out here.
Yes, it is. And how many vets would you say just around us right now?
Thousands.
Yeah, there are thousands that are all over this war memorial site, and they're in all kinds of jackets. It's a little coolish on the cool side today. And we've got vets that are dressed in all their colors of their units from Vietnam. We've got primarily a lot of Vietnam veterans walking past. I talked to a few earlier when I was coming in by the – they've got media trucks set up here. This is becoming a big coverage for Veterans Day today. Charlie, what did you think about Philadelphia yesterday? Tell us a little bit about your experiences there.
Oh, the Ron Paul Liberty Rally was held at the Liberty Mall. We were down across from a memorial to the current war casualties. They had a tombstone mock cemetery set up on the grass near the Liberty Bell, near Independence Hall. And that was to our left. To our right was the state-of-the-art National Constitution Center. And it was a cold day, but still I would say maybe five or 6,000 people showed up to hear Ron Paul address the crowd and give us a campaign update. And anyways, it was a really great, enthusiastic crowd. Everybody hung in there for the duration, even though it was very cold. So
we were sitting there streaming live video through We the People Radio Network. We want to thank Wes and Danny for giving us a good connection through there, and especially Todd Waits through Global Star Radio Network. He made our connection very, very successful. We were streaming especially the Ron Paul speech. Let's get to that. There were a series of different events, and there was some music there earlier and so forth. But when we finally came up and Ron Paul took the podium, there were thousands applauding and yelling and screaming, "Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul." We heard that over and over again. He looked down to the Independence Hall to his right, and he said, "We've got to get back to a new Declaration of Independence." And looking over to his left, he saw the Constitutional Center there, which is a state-of-the-art center about the Constitution. And he said, "We must start obeying the Constitution. We've got to get back to a constitutional government." Then he looked over and pointed out to the northeast from the podium. And there, fronting on the Independence Mall, was the U.S. Mint. And he said, "Also, we've got to quit creating money out of thin air and get back to honest money." Charlotte, what went through your mind when you heard those words?
Well, the crowd was cheering. I was just trying to capture it so that people, the listening audience, could hear how positive the crowd responded.
Yes, and it was overwhelmingly enthusiastic. And one thing about this... What did you think about it was a little hectic getting up on the air. We were a little late, but it's one of these grassroots things. What do you think about that grassroots movement, Charlotte?
Well, it's phenomenal. Ron Paul is definitely a candidate of the people. The people pushed him forward, and he accepted to run. So it's great. I mean,
we were surrounded. We virtually set up. There was a media platform there, which we put our camera up on top of, along with about four other cameras. And then at the end, we have this little aluminum table. In fact, we're using it today here at the Vietnam War Memorial. It folds out. You can carry it like a suitcase. And it folds out and makes a very nice table to broadcast from. Right now, the wall is varies in height. I don't know if our listening audience is aware of the construction of the wall. Early in the war, the Vietnam War, there were fewer casualties than later. The wall goes steadily up, and it progresses up to where we had the most casualties. And then it declines gradually from there. We've got corporals here and sergeants in their regalia and their colors. It's a really exciting Sunday. It's brilliantly sunshiny in Washington, D.C. It's about 55 degrees or so. But it's an excellent day to broadcast and to pay tribute and honor to our veterans.
Right. Oh, and the fall trees, they're bright orange, green, yellow. The park is absolutely beautiful. Everybody is milling around on the many pathways. It's just a beautiful day to be honoring the veterans.
We want to thank, too, yesterday on that broadcast from Independence Mall, we want to thank not only We the People Radio Network, Danny and Wes, thank you loads, man. Y'all did a great job. But we want to thank Ted Anderson also with GCN, head of GCN. He also carried the live video feed, and I believe they took the audio off of that feed and were able to broadcast that over our normal radio channels. But we want to thank especially both of those broadcasters. We broadcast on both of those networks. We certainly do appreciate their help in getting us up and running. Like I said, it was a little hectic beginning, and maybe it ended. I want to just make one little note. If anyone watching the broadcast saw a sudden cut off at the end, what happened, Charlotte?
The grassroots volunteers cut the generator off.
Well, we had a lot of different people there that were running generators and different things, and they didn't know. We were trying to wrap it up a little bit more professionally, and I think I made some statements, closing statements, and then all of a sudden I wanted to thank you, Wes, and you, Danny, and you, Ted Anderson, for really what you did, and I didn't really get to do that, so I'm thanking you today, here and now.
Yes, and of course all the volunteers for the Ron Paul Liberty Rally.
Yes, it was really interesting when I was getting ready to set up today. There's another broadcaster sitting in the park right behind us, and when my computer screen is low on power or just running on batteries, especially in bright sunshiny day, I could barely see the screen. So I begged off some power over here from a fellow broadcaster, and I don't know who he is exactly, but I want to thank him on the air. We'll get formal thanks here going in a second. Like I said, we're surrounded by veterans and their wives and their children and their families. Their children by now are usually 40 years old, you know, or so. So they're, you know, and because I'll tell you, most vets are probably about my age. I'm 63 years old, and we're here to honor people of that era. Charlotte, you were in the military too. What are your reflections of some of those conflicts we've had in the past?
Well, it's kind of like Vietnam was not a declared war. The Congress did not, it's my understanding anyways, the Congress did not declare war. It was considered a military action, a lot like all the skirmishes up to even today's war in Iraq. The Congress didn't declare war, so we find ourselves in a funny predicament where the people's wishes, it's hard to stop something like this because you get the machinery going and... So at any rate, I'd like to see us get back to the Constitution, and that if we're going to fight a war, that the Congress would declare it a war, then we get in there and we win it, like Ron Paul says. So that way everybody can...
I agree with Charlotte. We on any of these foreign ventures, we should have a formal declaration of war and then go and clean it up and with all of our might or whatever. But wars that are necessary, and that way we don't sacrifice needlessly our military who have had problems being sacrificed in needless wars in the past. If we fight wars, we need to make sure they are legitimate wars and not contrived wars like we've seen in the past. So those are our feelings today. We're here because we're both veterans ourselves. I was in the Vietnam veteran era myself. I spent 2 years in the Army Security Agency in Europe. And I was actually recalled after I got out of the service and completed my 3 years. I was recalled to Fort Sam Houston for reinductment to Vietnam. But I was standing in line. I'd hurt my right arm in a motorcycle accident. My right arm was paralyzed, so I was not fit for service or duty. So I was called out of the medical examination line, and I was disqualified on a physical, you know, basis to go there. Charlotte spent some time in Fort Sam Houston, too, I believe.
Right. I did a tour as the HHC of USARSO, U.S. Army South, HHC executive officer.
So we have some experience here ourselves. In other words, we did our service. In my case, I was a volunteer, and I think Charlotte, you volunteered too, didn't you?
Yes, I first did a Navy enlistment. I did 5 years active duty Navy enlistment. I have 4 years sea duty time. My first ship was the USS Shenandoah, and my second ship was the USS Simon Lake. Then I had a break in service, and I went back to the military, the National Guard, actually Iowa National Guard. Prior to 9/11, and then I served up until this past year where I resigned in November.
So we're both veterans, and we're here not only to pay tribute to the veterans that have fallen in the past. In fact, I wrote a song called Red, White, and Blue March that was commemorative of our fallen military. So, but also we're here to reveal and expose some of the problems that we've had in the past. With some of these problems of false flag type of operations, well, like the Gulf of Tonkin to start with. Now I think it's proven that was a contrived effort by the administration to actually build up the war in Vietnam.
Of course, and then we had the documentation for Operation Northwoods.
Yeah, we had documentation there where they pulled stuff out of the bag where they were going to do about anything to start a confrontation with Cuba.
And then, of course, there's the USS Liberty.
Yeah, we have a man that's going to be calling in a little bit and connect into us. His name is Bryce Lockwood. He was actually on the USS Liberty when it was attacked by Israeli forces. So he's going to be able to tell us a lot about his feelings and so forth. 1967 was when that was attacked right off the coast of Israel and Egypt. And he's going to be calling in, and we're going to do an interview with Bryce Lockwood. He's been on our program before on another station, another network. So we've had a full 2 hours with Bryce Lockwood. So we honor his sacrifice that he gave, and it was very great. I mean, those men there, we lost 35 good. There were torpedoes shot into the ship. You know, it didn't sink. They finally made it into port and everything, but it was hell for those men, and they're mad as hell about our government abandoning them and not sending. They actually had air power, you know, cover to go in and defend off some of those attackers, and the top man in the United States, President Lyndon Johnson, had those planes recalled. So as a result, they didn't. The attack continued, and it worsened, and the worst of the attack occurred after that. But so we're here to talk about things like Agent Orange. Our men in Vietnam are suffering from these chemicals that were used over there, and so we need to give them the best medical treatment that the United States has. And sometimes these VA hospitals are, well, just like the latest, I would say the latest problem has been the Gulf Syndrome. Are you familiar with that, Charlotte?
Yes. Some of that?
And so I think that was the latest thing that we had going there was that there were actually the Scuds. Saddam Hussein had shot in on our troops, had cocktails of biological chemical agents. So, and they contaminated our troops. Well, they come back from the Gulf War and Persian Gulf War, and they want treatment, and they want to be well and stuff like that. And as a result, they were not getting the treatment that they deserved. And so we're here to voice a few of those complaints about our vets not being treated right. We need medical treatment for our vets that when a veteran goes over and fights in one of our foreign wars, we need the vets to be treated properly. We need correct diagnosis. We need the medical teams in there. The finest in the world should be marshaled and take care of our veterans. And sometimes some of these ailments that like this, these cocktails, that there were MS, there were multiple sclerosis type of,
symptoms?
Symptoms, yeah. Some of the symptoms were like MS, multiple sclerosis and stuff. And they were hard to diagnose, and nobody really. Now, Joyce Riley that broadcast, she had the Power Hour. along with David Von Kleist. She alone actually started publicizing and traveling throughout the country trying to get veterans treated right and trying to get the medical treatment to our veterans. And she has been a voice for veterans more so than a lot of people. So Joyce Riley on the Power Hour is one person to commend and to respect. And she has brought to the forefront the problems of the Persian Gulf War and the cocktails that were shot in, biological chemical, on our troops there, which actually our government and our VA hospitals had ignored, and many of our troops died as a result of not being diagnosed properly. And we're here to stand up for our vets and say, look, we need good medical treatment for our veterans. We need to diagnose these things properly, and we need to come clean with any attacks of biological chemical on our troops. And we need to stand up and say and salute our veterans. And that's why we're here today. We traveled from Austin, Texas, by way of Philadelphia yesterday to be here. And we're standing up with the military color guards coming by and all these people surrounding us here. There are young children, probably grandchildren, that are and their grandfathers and grandmothers participated in the war. And we're just saying, we salute you. We want to be here to honor you. But also, we want to stand up for you and get you the medical treatment that you justly deserve for fighting and sacrificing so much in the war that we have fought. So they keep streaming by here. It's a brilliant, sunshiny day with a few puffy clouds, not many. And we're here in Washington, D.C. We're seated right across from the Vietnam War Memorial. The War Memorial varies in height depending on how many casualties we served during that particular year and period. And then it declines a little bit. It begins as a low wall. It goes up to a peak, and then it declines a little bit depending on how many casualties that we suffered then. We're going to be leaving here in just a second. We've got a commercial break coming up in about 18 seconds, and then we're going to be back and continue our, and we'll have some interviews. Charlotte's going to get out here on the grounds here and interview some vets and get some of their feelings. Welcome back to World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with my guest host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
We have a fine guest coming up next. His name is Bryce Lockwood. And he was actually on the USS Liberty when it was attacked off the coast of Israel in 1967. Welcome to the program, Bryce Lockwood.
Thank you, George. Charlotte, appreciate it.
Hi, Bryce.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being part of our program this morning. We are actually set up right across from the Vietnam War Memorial in the park here. And there is just a swarm of people here, very reverent, very respectful of our military dead that we have lost in the past. We have a gentleman coming through here, a corporal. Spec 4, actually, in a wheelchair. He's being pushed by his relatives and friends and highly decorated vets, and we want to pay respect to all of those people. And Bryce, you were a veteran too yourself. Tell us your story.
Well, I was stationed aboard the USS Liberty in 1967. We were assigned to oversee the impending war between the Arabs and the Israelis in June of 1967. Little did we realize that the Israelis would pick us for a target. It seems that on June 8th of 1967, the Israelis had captured an entire Egyptian brigade, somewhere in excess of 850 men, forced them to dig their own graves, and then brutally murdered them all. At just about that time, the USS Liberty showed up off El Arish on the Sinai Peninsula. Needless to say, the Israelis pretty well had to do something to cover up their crime, so they attacked the USS Liberty.
Well, I tell you, how long did the attack go on, Bryce?
Nearly 2 hours. They attacked us for quite some period of time with a French-made Mystere aircraft, dropped napalm on us, rockets, heavy caliber cannon fire. Then sent 3 motor torpedo boats out to finish off the job, sent 2 helicopters over. The Israelis claimed that they were to pick up any survivors that happened to fall into the sea or jump into the sea, but the truth of the matter is those 2 helicopters were loaded with fully armed troops, and the only thing they were after was to finish the job in case someone happened to live through the mess.
Were there war crimes committed, in your opinion, during this attack?
I'm sorry?
Were there war crimes committed during this attack?
Yes, definitely. to begin with, you just don't shoot at a ship at sea without identifying it. We were clearly flying the American flag. The Israelis claim that they didn't see it or it was not existent, but the truth of the matter is they did their best to shoot it down. When another one was run up, they tried to shoot it down. And finally, the third flag was run up, which was the post flag. It's the largest flag you have at ship, over 13 feet long. Impossible to not see it. Excuse me, the letters on the side of the ship, GTR-5, stood for General Technical Research, the fifth and newest ship of her class at the time. You just don't shoot at a ship at sea without looking up those numbers in Jane's fighting ships. And they would have plainly known that it was a non-combatant and just absolutely not doing anything but out there keeping track of what was going on.
Right, Bryce, it's my understanding. Okay, you just said they hit you with napalm?
Yes, they did. They
yeah,
dropped napalm on our, we had some davits that contained automatically inflatable life rafts. There was a lanyard with a small explosive charge. You just jerked on the lanyard, it would fire the explosive charge and spit out these life rafts and automatically inflate them. And Israelis dropped napalm on that. There was nothing left of them. They riddled all of our lifeboats. We only had one lifeboat, or actually, which they called in the Navy a Liberty launch and the Captain's launch. They riddled those with heavy caliber cannon fire, so they were just like a sieve, Swiss cheese. Then we finally had three of the old World War II type cork life rafts, roughly 5 feet by 8 feet cork life rafts with nylon webbing in between. Three of those were carried and put over the side to put our most seriously wounded on. These Israeli motor torpedo boats fired up and shot all of them and carried them away. I remember one of the men coming back into the radio shack and saying, "I don't know what we're going to do now. We don't have any way of getting off now."
Bryce, is it true that the signal was blocked, that
yes.
You guys sent out distress signals?
Yes, we had six distress frequencies. The Israelis apparently only had the capability of blocking five. They were jamming five of our distress frequencies, and the aircraft shot up all of our transmitting antennas. None of them worked. We had one antenna that had not worked the entire cruise, and it had a big shot hole in it. A couple of radio men went up there and strung a wire to it, tuned it up, and by golly, it worked after that big old shell hole in it. And got off of Mayday to the U.S. 6th Fleet. I was lying right there listening to it. Firefox, Firefox, this is Rockstar, Rockstar, under attack by unidentified surface and naval air units. Require immediate assistance. And as soon as the carrier Saratoga acknowledged our Mayday, the shooting stopped.
Bryce, there was probably more than one book, but the only book I'm familiar with is The Assault on the USS Liberty by James Eanes.
James Ennis, Jr.
Ennis, yes. For the listening audience, that book gives us a direct account of the assault.
It reads like a James Bond novel. It is just, if you're interested in military reading at all, it is just an excellent, easy reading, exciting book. I would not suggest that anyone read it before they go to bed, because when they find out what happened, they'll be so angry they won't be able to sleep.
Bryce, there was a recent, there was an article in the Chicago Tribune, was it?
Yes.
And there was also a response to that, I suppose. Can you tell me the latest you know about the Chicago Tribune article on the USS Liberty?
The article was in the Chicago Tribune on October the 2nd of this year. John Crutzen is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. He did extensive research. He interviewed people literally around the world. He found numerous U.S. military people that were listening in on the communications between the Israelis and our ground control station, definitely identifying it as a United States ship, definitely identifying that it was flying the American flag, and yet they were ordered by the ground controller to shoot on it anyway. On October the 30th, there was a meeting, a Tuesday evening meeting at the Intercontinental Hotel in Chicago. Michael Hayden, who is the General Michael Hayden, who is the current director of the Central Intelligence Agency, was the guest speaker for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. I was an invited guest along with two other Liberty survivors, Stan White, a retired Master Chief Petty Officer of the U.S. Navy. He was the senior enlisted man aboard the USS Liberty, and Ernie Gallo, who was that electronics repairman aboard the Liberty. The three of us were guests of a couple of members and one other person who were traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They paid our way to get there, put us up in a very nice hotel, and had us as guests of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. The General talked about activities and directions of the current CIA. Afterwards, there was a question and answer session, and Mr. Dan Egan, who was our sponsor for the program, held up his hand at the question and answer session, and he was called upon. And he said, General, in view of the recent Securities Revelation Act that was passed, I'm not sure that's the exact title, but he wanted to know, would it be possible for the agency to release any and all information concerning the events of June 8, 1967, when 34 Americans were killed and over 170 were wounded by Israeli Defense Forces? He never mentioned the USS Liberty. I thought it was pretty interesting if the General shot right back. I presume you're talking about the USS Liberty incident.
Welcome back to our program, Bryce Lockwood.
Thank you, sir.
You know what just fell down on my notebook computer? A maple leaf. I think God's overseeing this broadcast, man.
Autumn in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, maple leaf right on my computer, my notebook.
Beautiful here.
I had to ask Charlotte what kind of leaf it was. I'm not that
East
good
Texas,
at it.
East Texas. I've lived north, so.
Well, you know, we've got a lot of cedar trees in Austin, Texas, but we don't have the beautiful trees they have up in the northeast here.
So, Bryce, you were finishing.
Go ahead, yeah.
I had just mentioned that I had been an invited guest at a meeting with General Michael Hayden that was sponsored by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs on October the 30th. And the gentleman that invited me had just been asked to, invited to ask a question of the general, and he commented about a previous meeting in which the general had indicated that the agency, was trying to declassify things as much as possible. And therefore, would the agency release any and all information concerning events of June 8, 1967, in which 34 Americans were killed and over 170 wounded? And the general shot right back, and he said, I presume you're talking about the USS Liberty incident. And he said, as you know, when I was director of the National Security Agency, I released all of the intercept tapes of the helicopter pilots. Without committing himself to anything, he indicated that both sides claimed that it proved their point that the attack was either accidental or on purpose, and then dropped it.
So okay. I'll tell you, there's how long have you been working on trying to get the truth out on this, on the USS Liberty?
Oh, probably 20 years. We were ordered to silence, so it was in the early years after the attack up until, the early 1980s. It was just, you didn't dare talk about it because you were afraid that you were going to be arrested and sent off to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas for life in prison. And the whole of it was is the Johnson administration ordered a clamp on the entire thing, and we were ordered to never talk about it.
Was President Johnson the one that ordered the fighters back from the carrier?
Yes, he was. Actually, it was Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. When Admiral Geis, who was the commanding officer of the U.S. 6th Fleet in the Mediterranean, challenged the fact that Secretary of Defense McNamara had ordered the rescue aircraft back, Admiral Geis challenged that. He said, I exercise my right to hear that from the highest authority, and Secretary McNamara said, here's the president. President Johnson says, get those aircraft back. I don't care if the ship sinks. I will not have my allies embarrassed. Well, I'd like to know how he knew who was attacking us. The Israelis were using unmarked aircraft, and those of us who were there didn't know who was attacking us.
It's a crime.
Absolutely.
There are many war crimes involved in this attack on the USS Liberty, and you lost some good friends, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had a very close friend of mine, Ronnie Campbell, that was killed in the torpedo attack. He was literally cut in half by a piece of shrapnel from the torpedo. I was a watch section supervisor. I had three sailors, two Marines assigned to my watch section, and a civilian advisor by the name of Al Blue. And out of those six men, five were killed, including both of the other Marines.
Are you renting them out?
Bryce, for the younger listening audience, this was a little bit of background. This was happened at the start of the Six-Day War, the Israeli Six-Day War.
This occurred in June of 1967, the early days of June 1967. We were actually attacked on June the 8th of 1967. War was imminent between the Israelis and the surrounding Arab countries, Syria, Jordan, the Palestinians, and Egypt. And the USS Liberty was sent by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to oversee things. Our interest was not against Israel. As a watch section voice supervisor, I was told by our operations officer, Lieutenant Commander Dave Lewis, that we were not interested in Israeli targets, that we were only after the Russians and the Arabs. If we picked up an Israeli target, we were to identify it and notate it and drop it. Our primary interest was the Russians to make sure that they behaved themselves and didn't get involved.
Didn't they have a nuclear submarine off the coast of Israel at the time?
I understand that,
the Russians.
And I understand that there's a book about that. I'm sorry I don't have those facts right at the top of my head, but there's a book out about that. The commander of that submarine was ordered that if the Israelis used the nuclear weapon in any way against the Russian Arab allies, that Soviet submarine was to make a sea of glass out of the country of Israel.
Right. And so for the history books, this was potentially or possibly what it probably was a false flag operation gone bad. Had they sunk the USS Liberty, the possibility existed that that could have been blamed on the Egyptians or somebody besides the guilty party, besides Israel, to provoke, to get America into the fight.
And excuse me, but the Israelis had a perfectly good excuse already set up. They said that they thought that it was the Egyptian ship, the El Kassir. El Kassir was a World War I class horse transport back in the old cavalry days. El Kassir had not gone to sea for over 20 years, was absolutely unworthy of going to sea, and was waiting to be cut up for scrap. And for the Israelis to use that as excuse is absolutely preposterous. Admiral Tom Moore, who at the time was very shortly after the Liberty incident, was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stated that the USS Liberty was the ugliest ship in the U.S. fleet, and it was absolutely impossible for anybody to mistake her.
So would that be right, that this is a false flag operation gone bad?
I suppose that's a possibility, yes. There are several of us crew members that believe that think there's a very good possibility that we were just set up by our own government, and that the Israelis were supposed to just rough us up a little bit and then blame it on the Egyptians. But they got a lot more serious than that.
Well, they ever actually, didn't they overfly the ship for a number of hours earlier before the commencement of the attack?
Yes, there were at least three sorties of overflights of Israeli, and those aircraft were marked. And that was in the morning of June the 8th. And they flew so close that there were several of the sailors that just absolutely unworried. I mean, excuse me, we were in international waters, 13 and a half miles off the Sinai Peninsula. And absolutely unworried about ever getting involved. Several of the sailors were up there sunning themselves, and they were waving at the Israeli pilots, and the Israeli pilots were waving back at us. Excuse me, many of them were trained right here in the United States.
Boy, I tell you, what a tragic thing that happened. You said once that I heard on one of our other programs that had that they shot a a torpedo in at, towards the end of the attack to try to sink the ship.
Actually, they fired five torpedoes at us, and
okay.
That really is what really, really angers me, because it's my understanding that the torpedoes were made in the United States of America, that they were sold to the Italians as war surplus after World War II, Mark IV type torpedoes. If anybody happens to be traveling on I-95 between the Florida and Georgia border, there's a rest area on the northbound side of I-95, and if you go in there, there's a number of memorabilia of military actions, and one of those is a World War II Mark IV torpedo. It's monstrous. And you sit there and look at it. I sat there and looked at it, and I thought, oh, my God, that's what they fired at us. They were sold a surplus to the Italians. The Italians sold them to the Israelis, and the Israelis used our marvelous foreign aid program to finance firing them right back at us and killing our Americans.
Had that torpedo buried a few inches one way or another, that ship would have gone to the bottom. Is that what you said before?
Yes, there was a part of a major superstructure of the ship, and the torpedo struck directly on the flange of that I-beam that was part of the major structure of the ship. If it had struck either direction, left or right from there, just a matter of a few inches, it would have just ripped the ship to shreds.
Down to the bottom.
Yep. Right to Davy Jones's locker.
I got you. We're going to take another break in just a little while. We'll get out with this segment if you have time. And so we'll be back to a few here, and we'll get a little more. But we want to honor our vets today, and this is one way that we can really honor our vets and take up for our veterans and stand up for them and salute them for the sacrifices they've contributed in the past. So we'll be right back in about 3 minutes. Thank you, Bryce.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to our program, Bryce Lockwood. This is George Butler reporting live along with my guest co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
We're reporting from the Veterans Memorial, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. We have veterans of all shapes and sizes, varying in age. We have a World War II veteran sitting here at the table with us and a friend of his from Vietnam that we're going to interview at the top of the hour. But Bryce Lockwood, welcome back. Continue your story. That torpedo could have buried a little bit, and that would have gone to the bottom, would it not?
Absolutely. And excuse me. Thank you, George. I really appreciate you folks at bringing out the story of the USS Liberty. Has just been absolutely covered up in history. We were ordered not to talk about it. There was a big cover-up by our own Defense Department, ordered by the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And excuse me, but...
Well, man like you, Bryce... Yeah, go ahead.
No, after you, sir.
Men like you made and continued to establish and continue a strong America. We thank you. And for our listening audience, Bryce Lockwood was awarded a Silver Star for his gallantry on board that ship that day during that attack. So we want to thank you, Bryce Lockwood, for your heroic effort.
Oh, you're Charlie Wilkins. Excuse me. I'm in awe of all the folks that are visiting the memorial back there. That memorial is absolutely astounding. And
right now, there's a sidewalk, and we set our table up along the sidewalk. We have a World War II vet sitting at one of our seats at our table, and we have a Vietnam veteran that we're going to interview after the top of the hour, and there's all kinds of veterans surrounding us. This is a marvelous day to pay tribute to our military that have given their all for this country.
And remembrance of those that were killed.
Yes, especially those that were killed, you know.
And, those that gave all.
Tell us what you did. Didn't you barely escape out of a water a compartment there earlier, and you helped save some people, get them out of a compartment that was flooding? Is that one of your...
I was less than 10 feet from the torpedo facing it when it exploded.
My gosh.
I had two white circles where my glasses were, and the rest of me was charred. I heard a moan behind me. I was knocked almost unconscious, but I was just kind of slipping in and out of consciousness. And my first thought was, well, Lord, I guess this is it. I guess I'm coming home. At least Lois and the kids are taken care of. And I felt something cold. And I looked down, and the bulkhead had split right in front of me, and water was gushing through there. And I thought, oh, my God, we're in trouble. And I struggled to my feet, and I heard a moan behind me, and there was a sailor that had been pinned in between a collapsed bulkhead and the ladderway that went up to the next level. I didn't realize at the time it was a Joe Lentini. He had had a piece of shrapnel strike his left thigh, and blood was gushing out of his thigh. And he sat down on the deck and was putting a tourniquet on the wound when the torpedo struck. There was a kind of a temporary bulkhead that separated the office spaces on the ship from the passageway that led in between the various offices and compartments. And that light metal bulkhead had slammed into his leg and just shattered it. He was pinned into the wreckage. I heard him moaning, and the water was just almost to his chin. I got my my arms under his arms and tried to pull him free, but he was just wedged in there tight. And I'm shouting at him. I said, come on, you got to help me. You got to help me. I can't do it by myself. And I could hear him moaning, and his head was kind of rolling around, and he was just almost swallowing seawater by that time. And I said, come on, get your legs under you and push. And excuse me, I didn't know that his left leg was just totally shattered. But he was just almost conscious, and he got his right leg under him just enough and pushed just hard enough to where it could pull him free. But his busted-up leg was still tangled up in the wreckage. And by that time, the water was almost up to the overhead. And I saw this body floating past, and he was face up in the water and obviously just almost unconscious. I got an arm around him and tried to hold his head above water, and I said to Joe, I said, here, get a hold of these pipes up here. Hold yourself up. And, his head was still kind of rolling around, and I'm shouting at him. I said, you're going to be okay? Are you going to be okay? He says, yeah, I'm okay, but his leg was still all tangled up. And most of the sailors were on the ladderway and pounding and shouting and screaming. And just right at the top of my lungs, I just screamed, knock it off. If y'all don't settle down, none of us will get out of here alive. I heard the division officer, Lieutenant Bennett, was at the top of the ladderway, and I heard him shouting to the people above. I said, open this hatch. This Lieutenant Bennett, open this hatch. And I guess I passed out because I don't remember events that occurred for quite a while after that. They said that I carried a man out, went back down. Stan White, who was the senior enlisted man aboard the ship, said he looked me right in the eye and said, you can't go back down there. And he said I just gave him a blank stare and turned around and went back down. Don't remember it. But anyway, the next thing I remember was fighting the sea with a unconscious sailor, and everybody else was gone, and I was shut in. Just a huge hole in the side of the ship. You could put small house in that side that hole. It was so huge, 36 to 42 feet. And the sea wasn't real rough that day, but just by nature, the sea rolls, and a ship rolls with it, and every time she rolled, water would just gush in and out that huge hole. And I dropped this guy, and he's heading out the hole, and I kind of swam back to get a hold of him and got him and drug him back and started up the ladder way. And the torpedo had ruptured an oil tank, so not only did we have seawater everywhere, there was oil all over everything, just really slippery. I started up the ladder way, and it's real narrow, just barely wide enough for a man to get up and down it. The piece of the torpedo had struck the railing and bent it way back inside. Do you need a break for commercial? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. The piece of the torpedo had struck the railing and bent it way back inside, and I got to that part and dropped him again, and here he goes back out the hole again. I thought, damn it, I got you this far. You're not getting away from me now. Went back and got him and drug him back up again. And finally got up to the top of the ladderway and the hatch was sealed shut. All I could think about was, dadgum sailors, they run off and left me down here with this guy and I don't even know who he is. And I'm trying to hold his head above water with one hand and pound on the hatch with the other. And the captain had sent a damage control man by the name of Phil Turney down there to see how badly the ship was hurt. He wasn't even supposed to be in there. That was secured spaces, and he wasn't even supposed to be in there. He came in and opened the scuttle hole. It's a small opening in the center of the hatch, and saw me down there and opened the hatch up and let me out. Are you back with us again, George?
Yes, we had our connection drop off on us, our wireless here, but we're right back up with you now, Bryce. Go ahead and continue. You got a couple more minutes.
I think that gentleman was Eugene Six. He did live, although he was pretty badly injured. And there was another one, Dave McFagan. Dave had been up topside in the air raid, and an explosion from one of the rockets from the Israelis that exploded right next to him and blew him back into a bulkhead and shattered his back. And all he could think about was when you're seeing under attack, you got to get to your GQ station. Got to get to my GQ station. Well, his GQ station was down below decks. And he got down there just before they slammed the hatch shut and sealed it. And he was sitting on the ladderway and thinking, oh, my God, I hurt so bad. When the torpedo struck and slammed him back into that ladderway, and I shattered three more bones in his spine. Commercial break time.
Yeah, we're going to come to the end of this hour, and we want to thank you for participating in this program today, and especially so because we're right here at the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C., and I'm George Butler, your host, along with our guest host, Charlotte Littlefield. And we're going to be interviewing a veteran from Vietnam here at the top of the hour. Thank you very much, Bryce Lockwood, for what
George,
you've done
Charlotte,
for this
thank thing. You very much for inviting me.
And we salute you and your honor and your heroic efforts in saving lives on the USS Liberty. And we thank you very much for your interview. Thank
God
you.
God bless you,
much.
Bryce.
Thank
you another time.
You're a good
thank
man.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Good citizen, a good American citizen. Thank you very much, sir.